Turner and Lucha on the cage.
Right, yeah.
And by the way, we're changing that order as well, so it's going to be Lucha Turner.
Yeah, I don't think so. Somewhere else.
The joke's over, we've had it. Oh, Marmaduke. Tell me about Marmaduke. You're so desperate to talk about Marmaduke.
Marmaduke.
Oh, who's handling that? When can I see that? Why am I not invited to this? I want to see this film.
The film also stars Alessandro Novella.
So I believe he's a close personal friend of yours.
And he is a close personal
friend of mine. Did you meet him at Edinburgh?
I did meet him at Edinburgh.
And you spent some time with him while he was on the jury. But, I don't know how I get all of that stuff. We must have talked about it before. Also stars Annette Damon.
No, bollocks to that. No. Abort.
Who is an American actress who's known for
that. Again. Forget the, my
friend. I'm going to keep that in.
No.
That's going to go
don't
in.
Don't you dare keep that in.
That's going in.
Hello, and welcome to the inaugural Turner and Lucha podcast. In which we will be attempting to recreate the experience of standing around after a screening and talking shit.
For an hour or so. Yeah. You are?
I'm Matthew Turner. I do all the film reviews for View London.
I'm Kassam Luch, also a film reviewer for Movie Vortex.
And we just thought that the name Turner and Luch was basically too good to resist, so that's how this happened.
That is all we've got, is the name. Everything else, we're kind of figuring it out as we go along.
That is true. I've got a slight confession to make in that I've never actually listened to a podcast and I have no idea what podcasting really involves.
I
just never have.
Yeah, well, with the five films a day and then EastEnders and Big Brother and...
I've got another confession to make, actually, which is that I've never actually seen Turner and Hooch. So, what happens in Turner and Hooch?
It's a canine comedy from the 80s with Tom Hanks. I don't know what you're expecting. It came out at the same time as K-9. With the dog and...
When cop and dog movies were all the rage.
Yeah, exactly. So that's another
Which one came out first? Which one got the drop on the cop and dog audience?
I think it was Turner and Hooch. But yeah, but what stuck out...
So K-9 was the volcano to Turner and Hooch's... what's that one with...
Dante's Peak.
Dante's Peak,
See, I've already scored a point on you there. Score one for me.
Or the Deep Impact to Turner and Hooch's Armageddon, or is that the other way around?
Deep Impact was first, and then Armageddon came out, yeah. But as ever, the second one was the more successful one. K-9 had a sequel, didn't it? There's no Turner and Hooch.
Does K-9000 count as a sequel to K-9?
Yeah.
Does
it's
it?
A sequel, it's the same character.
Yeah, I've not seen that either.
Alright.
I'm not really up on my dog and cop.
You're making it sound like you don't watch enough movies. What number film did you watch this morning?
300.
For the year?
My 300th film of the year, yeah.
We're in August.
It was a Danny Diamond. You know Kim Newman's seeing 500? Kim Newman is seeing his 500th film this evening. Jonah Hex will be his 500th film.
Well, I guess we can talk about what we're going to be talking about today.
Well, we're going to be talking about the top five US box office, which has a bit of an upset in the middle of it.
Yeah.
We're going to be talking about our current frontrunners for the best of 2010, basically our favourite films so far this year. We're going to be predicting films in the London Film Festival.
Right, yeah. So we've both got a list of films that we think, and we're going to come up with five each, and then when the announcement comes, I guess on September the 8th, when we go to the launch, we'll know for sure who wins. Technically, I do already have a point, because I guess the closing film, which is the Danny Boyle film, 127 Hours, but for some reason you're not recognising it.
No.
That is a legitimate, clean victory.
It wasn't on paper or
out loud. It is witness.
Not by me.
Well.
And we also know that Let Me In is going to be in the festival. Yeah. The remake of Let the Right One In. So
we know the opening film as well, right?
The opening film is the one with Keira Knightley and
Andrew Garfield
and Carey Mulligan. Never Let Me Go.
That's the one, yeah.
Which to my mind, I don't know anything about it, but the trailer seems to give away a bit too much.
I've not seen the trailer, and I think that's probably a good thing. Oh, have you seen the trailer for Black Swan?
Yeah, I made that the trailer of the week this week on the View London film blog.
And we're going to take some questions and hopefully give some answers out as well. Given that this is the first podcast, it might be a bit slow in terms of questions and answers, but we'll see how we go.
Well, in that we've only got one question.
All right, I wasn't trying to draw attention to it, but yeah.
If you have any questions that you would like us to answer, please email us on turnerandlooch at gmail.com or via Twitter. We have a Twitter account as well, also just called Turner and Looch, which I believe is referred to as at Turner and Looch.
We're also going to review some of the films that are out right now.
Oh yeah, I suppose we are.
Seeing as we've seen most of them.
Yeah. Well, all of them, in my case.
So we've just come from a Danny Dyer film called The Seven. I got it.
The Last Seven.
I walked in and I said, "Where's Lucky Seven on?" And they said, "What are you talking about?" So, yeah, embarrassed already. But
well, and the best thing you can say about it is that Danny Dyer wasn't in it all that much. No, that's not true. I like Danny Dyer. Well, in fact, I'm going to go on record and say that the film would have been better if Danny Dyer had been in it more.
There's no film that would be better with more Danny Dyer.
That film would have been.
Oh, dear.
If he played one of the other characters, it would have been a better film.
It would have been just some mockney, cockney, whining guy going, "How are you fucking
saying?" They were terrible actors. They were really terrible actors.
The guy who was the MP guy, Henry, was it? That was really bad.
He was really bad, so was the lead, the guy playing William. He was just bad.
I guess they were trying to get everyman type character in there, but he just like nobody rather than anybody.
It's a bad film. Let's just leave it at that. Very bad.
It's not film of the week. Let's put it that.
Yeah. Do you know what next week's films are? Because I don't actually have a full list.
Well, I know the big one's going to be Scott Pilgrim.
Yeah.
Expendables is this week, so we'll talk about that in a moment. Next week is we'll have a look at that. We'll do a little preview, but we've got to concentrate on this.
You don't know, that's what you're saying.
I'm just trying to work in my head. Avatar reissue.
Nice
Avatar reissue is one.
I might do a blog post about it. If the 8 minutes are significantly obvious, I don't know how I'm supposed to spot them.
How many times have you seen the first one?
Just once.
Yeah, same here. I
can't bring myself to sit down and watch the 3 hour, you know, the original cut before I see the special.
Oh God, no.
8 minutes longer cut, just so I can spot the 8 minutes. It would be really handy if they flagged them up. Like, extra minute coming up. Little like, you know, when they say put on your 3D glasses now, they should put up like, something that goes, "This bit's new, everyone, pay attention."
Well, is it? Well, we don't know, but I'm assuming it's going to be whole scenes.
Color it slightly differently.
I'm assuming it's going to be whole scenes inserted into the film rather than just random shots scattered throughout it.
I'm assuming a bit of both. Extra scenes plus maybe the extra sort of lengthened scenes. Extra shots, like you said, maybe some extra special effects shots, a little bit like Whisper It, George Lucas and Phantom Menace, and the original Star Wars.
Oh, right, okay.
Putting in extra monsters and stuff like that.
It's coming out on Blu-ray soon. With the extra scenes, is it?
Let's not try and cover everything.
let's not
make everything. Yeah, I know it's an introduction. Yeah, I know. Okay, so let's move on.
Okay.
Let's get started. Shall we talk about the top five US box office first?
Okay. I was hoping that you've got a list there.
I have got a list.
Okay.
I missed a screening this morning especially to prepare this list.
A screening of a film you've already seen.
Yeah, true. Okay. I wasn't remiss in anything.
Trying to be a martyr there.
Yeah, no.
For my art, I missed the screening. No.
These figures, though, are correct as of the weekend. These are their opening weekend figures. So okay. I think they've shifted around a little bit since then, but not significantly. So The Expendables was number one, with straight in at number one with $35 million, which is pretty good, would you say?
I've lost all track of what is good and bad nowadays.
I think 35 is considered a healthy...
For a film that is... 15 or the equivalent in the US, right?
Mm. Okay. I think they'd be happy with that. Well, I mean, number one, so obviously they get that accolade.
I was going to say they're talking about sequels, but they were talking about that even before it came out, so we don't need to...
I've got to give credit to Emily Mulder from onthebox.com, whose joke about the sequel is that the sequel should be them all going together to break Wesley Snipes out of jail.
Paul Wesley Snipes.
Yeah, Paul Wesley Snipes. But you could do it with all of them, couldn't you? Get a... they all get together to make Steven Seagal go on a diet, or they all get together to, you know, something Jean-Claude Van Damme, I don't know.
Section
Jean-Claude Van Damme. So yeah, I mean, I would have thought that
that's
the Expendables was, yeah, it's number
that's
one.
That's out this week here as well.
Yeah, don't get ahead of yourself, let's continue.
Oh, I'm not reviewing it, I'm just saying, from the early previews, it looks like it's doing quite well. They did previews on the weekend and on Wednesdays and stuff, so yeah.
Number two is the Julia Roberts movie Eat, Pray, Love. Have you seen that?
God, no. No, not yet.
Me neither. I've read kind of little comments about it on Twitter and on, like basically snarky comments about it on Twitter and on and like blogs.
From people who've seen it or just from...
Yeah, from people who've seen it and from people who are going to have to see it.
Right. Well,
I don't know anything about the plot. You don't know the plot?
She goes on a voyage of discovery. I'm guessing here. She goes on a voyage of discovery. She leaves her cheating husband and... meets a younger, more attractive guy who she ends up with and rediscovers her joie de vivre.
I'm assuming there's that's eating, praying and loving involved.
Yeah. All I do know is that it's kind of a journey around the world. I know that much. I don't know what in what?
Why are they eating?
Oh, you eat when you go around the world, don't you?
Yeah, but you eat.
Anyway, I don't know. I
guess pretty terrible title. That's all I'm saying.
Bad title. That is
anyway, that got 23. I mean, if Expendables had 35 million, that got 23.7 million.
That's a big number as well.
Which is a big number for that kind of movie, I would say. So, and plus, you know, coming in at number two. More importantly, is what they did better than, which we'll get to in a minute. The Other Guys is got 18 million in its second week. That had a massive opening, and that's already at 70 million.
Right.
So I would have thought we will be seeing The Other Guys too.
I was watching The Departed yesterday, and there's a bit in it where Mark Wahlberg has a line where he goes, "I'm the guy who knows how to do his job. You must be the other guy."
Yeah.
Is that what the film is referencing? I guess
probably. Yeah.
Because I mean,
set up of the movie.
Yeah. Premise, these are two sort of desk jockey, slightly incompetent cops who get their chance to.
I think that other guy thing is a standard joke.
Right.
I'm the guy that does this. You must be.
Yeah, I think
it's a standard joke in the States, and I think it will be. It's not like a specific nerdy reference to The Departed. It's more of a sort of general.
Well, the nerdy thing would be him doing it.
Yeah. But I don't think you can build a film title on just a specific reference that only people who've seen The Departed will get.
I don't know. I've seen more tenuous links than that.
Well, that's true. Number four is Inception, still clinging in there. That's already at 248 million, which, let's not be about the bush, it's a pretty fucking big number.
Yeah,
for that sort of film. And very encouraging, really.
Well, what do you mean by that sort of film? With the biggest.
Something that makes you think and something that's different. And
yeah, but the stats are it's got Leonardo DiCaprio in it, it's got.
Shutter Island didn't get 250 million.
True, but it did quite well. I mean, I think these two are like his biggest films aside from Titanic, I think.
Yeah.
And it did his numbers, certainly. But, I mean, yeah, it's more of a Christopher Nolan film than anyone else.
But can I accept that, and I'm not going to argue against that, but can you really say just because it's the director of The Dark Knight that everybody went to see this film? It's not just that.
You have been made aware that it is from the director of The Dark Knight, is part of it, I'm sure it is. I'm sure people have seen Nora, right, okay, it's the guy who made Dark Knight. There's some familiar faces in there as well from his previous films, including from Dark Knight, you know, Cillian Murphy, Michael Caine's in it. I think it doesn't explain the massive success. Well, what explains the massive success is that it's a really good film that makes you think, and people are going twice to watch it, so, yeah.
Although arguably you don't need to go and see it twice, it's not that kind of film.
It's fun, you can
relax a bit more, yeah. You can pay attention a bit more, so you can kind of take it in a bit more maybe,
certain
individuals and stuff, without worrying about who's who and what's going on and what's going to happen.
I've seen this three times, and although you, like you say, you can take it in more, you know what's going on and things like that, you kind of understand it less each time you watch it. At least I did.
Seen it twice, and I got more out of it the second time, just purely because I missed bits, missed rather crucial bits the first time around.
Right.
Particularly the whole thing about the spinning top, but I don't really want to go into that right now.
With the main crux of the film.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. They bury that line. They bury that line about the importance of the spinning top in the middle of that speech, and I just didn't pay attention, really.
Filmmakers. Signposts for Matthew Turner, please. Signposts for Matthew Turner.
Yeah, you need to really kind of, absolutely telegraph these things for the idiots in the audience. And the last one, this is the shocker, Scott Pilgrim, obviously one of a massively hyped film both here and in America, with what looks like a short, built-in appeal, like Michael Cera and Edgar Wright and everything, only took 10.525 million over the weekend.
Now, how popular are Edgar Wright's films in the US beforehand? I don't think they would have made significantly more money than this.
Sure, the Dead did pretty well, didn't it? No, Hot Fuzz maybe not, but The Dead definitely did.
Considered cult films still in the US. I don't think they're widely regarded or...
Certainly amongst my friends and people on Twitter and everything, the anticipation for this film was really high.
Do you not think then that just kind of highlights who your friends are and who is on Twitter? We've seen the film, right? And they're deliberately not dumbing it down or taking out all the comic book elements or anything like that. And Michael Cera is not the biggest draw in Hollywood.
There's quite a lot of talk about a Michael Cera backlash, actually, that people are kind of fed up with him doing the same thing over and over again. And maybe they just think, oh, it's another Michael Cera movie. You were in the blogger's pen at the premiere, though.
I was at the premiere, yeah. And I was at the premiere as well, where they all came down and did a little introduction before the film. The writer was there as well. What was his name?
Brian Lee O'Malley.
Yeah, he was there. And he obviously has a cameo in the film, which I didn't realise until
I didn't see him until MovieCon. I saw him. I didn't know what he looked like.
Me neither.
So I wouldn't be on the spot for the movie.
And this is the thing. This is definitely a film that I enjoyed more the second time around than the first time.
That's really interesting because I didn't. I've seen it twice as well, and I didn't enjoy it the second time nearly as much. Maybe because it was at the end of a very long MovieCon weekend.
Yeah, I laughed a lot more the second time around. It was far more enjoyable. There you go. I think again, it's going to have an audience that will go and watch it again. But there will be, like you say, a certain group of people that, because of the participants or for whatever reason, they won't go and see it at all. Which is a shame. It's one of the better films around at the moment. I think it's unfortunate that it went up against Expendables and the Julia Roberts chick flick.
Poor Scott Pilgrim getting pawned by Julia Roberts.
Kind of takes a whole, the widest possible audience out of the equation. I think, I'll tell you what, it's interesting. People in this country are watching films quite differently to the way they're watching them in the States.
Yeah, very
true. They tend to watch them in blocks, so you watch two or three films on an evening. Or you watch them over the course of a weekend. People are buying more passes for weekends and stuff, so it doesn't necessarily matter here what films you go up against, I don't think. And I'm finding that out quite a lot from people who aren't doing this stuff that we do, watching films for free and blagging.
Thinking about that, I don't really know that many people, but I know that obviously a lot of people go on Orange Wednesday and maybe the weekend, and that's it pretty much.
Yeah, but obviously if you've got Orange Wednesday, you can go twice or
I can't believe we've already done product placement. That's outrageous.
All right, we're not product. Well, right,
yeah. Damn you, Orange Wednesday, and your pernicious marketing strategies.
They've got to talk about that, haven't they? Yeah. But anyway, so that is the US box office for this week. We'll keep an eye on it.
Have you read the books?
No.
It's really faithful to them. I mean, I recommend the books, definitely. Yeah. I possibly wouldn't recommend them before the movie, because they are the story of the movie.
Right.
But afterwards, they're definitely worth reading.
Yeah.
And it's worth checking out if you haven't already. There's a, on YouTube, someone has taken the images from the comic book and transposed them over the trailer, so that you can see how really closely the images from the movie correspond to the images of the books. And also the dialogue is actually exactly the same. Like, you can hear... In the YouTube video, you can hear Michael Cera and Mary Elizabeth Winstead saying the lines, and you see them in the speech bubble. So, yeah, it's very. If you love the books, you're really going to love the movie. If you've never heard of the books, your reaction to the movie may be slightly different.
So how many books does the film cover then? All of them?
All six.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. In a roundabout way, that is the top five at the US box office, and our take on everything surrounding that.
Okay, well, should we move on to...
I want to get started on the LFS thing.
Okay.
If you don't mind. Yep. I want to see what you've got lined up. Because you kept it secret from me. I've not seen your list.
No, I haven't seen your list either.
So, I've got quite a lengthy list.
What I suggest for the purposes of this thing is that we lay our lists down in front of each other.
Right.
And we pick one each until we've both got five each.
Right.
Okay?
Okay.
Okay, so, go on then.
Okay. So what? I pick one from mine.
We pick one. I pick one from. Tree of Life. No way.
It's just my outside bet. What I was saying is, what if the film is a surprise film? You get a bonus point.
Yeah, if you pick the surprise film, you do get a bonus point.
All right.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. We've both got two lists of 10 films each.
Go on.
And I can see, just looking at them, that we have picked some of the same ones, but actually not that many at all. No. But you've also got more than 10. So that's
correct.
Cheating. That's cheating.
All right, okay, all right. Let me quickly...
Scrub a few out.
No need to do that. Hereafter, no chance. Give me the money myself if that's there.
Why?
It's not going to happen.
Why do you think that?
No, it's not ready.
Why do you think that?
It's not ready.
Okay. Full confession, this list isn't entirely compiled on my own knowledge. I've pulled a couple of those from a couple of my friends who are close festival followers.
Wait, and, you've got more than 10 as well though, right? Or is that
no, that's 10, I think. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, and then one of them's an extra.
Right, I suggest
this, which I don't think we can talk about on the podcast.
Right, okay. Well, I suggest we scrub out the ones that we've got the same.
No. We do it the way I said. We pick one. You pick one, I pick one. You can pick first. Go ahead.
What, from my list, I can pick one.
Or from mine. That's the whole point.
All right, okay. Yeah, fair enough. Okay. I will go for, as my first pick, I say The Tempest will be there.
The Tempest. Tell us a little bit about The Tempest.
I know it's at Venice. It's Helen Mirren in it, and who's the director, female director, whose name I can't remember right now?
Oh, not the woman that did Titus Andronicus.
Yes.
Titus.
Yes.
What's her name?
I don't know. But I think Ashley Hopkins is in this as well. I'm not sure again.
She's brilliant, though. I like her films a lot.
That's
actually very exciting. I did the Tempest Ray level, so I'm very excited to see that. Julie Taymor, is that right?
Taymor something. Yeah.
Okay, my first choice is going to be, I think in terms of Dead Cert, I think Mike Leigh, Another Year, which I see you've got on your list as well.
Yeah.
I saw that the other night, actually, and the best thing I can say about it is that Leslie Manville is absolutely astonishing in it. She's really, really great.
Yeah.
But it's quite a hard film to really enjoy, because it's just so kind of depressing, really,
yeah.
Without giving too much away. But it's,
right, so that's your choice then, yeah? I'll look forward to that.
I would think that when BAFTA time comes around, Leslie Manville will definitely be, just like Sally Hawkins and Happy-Go-Lucky.
But it was at Cannes, right?
She
was certainly talked about as...
Yeah.
She didn't win it in the end.
I think she will definitely win, or at least be nominated for the BAFTA when that rolls around.
Right, okay. We have got quite a few saying ones, so I'm going to go for one of the ones that we've both got, but one that we haven't talked about before, and that's Love and Other Drugs.
Right, okay.
Which is Jake Gyllenhaal and Anne Hathaway. I know you're looking at me as if I'm going to tell you about it. I don't know. I'm just picking these films.
I know. Well, how did you pick it then? Because I picked that one from my friend's recommendation, and I looked it up afterwards.
But I looked at some of the other festival lineups, and also looked at Roundabout when they were looking to release it, and going on previous years as well, and also some of the type of films that you can expect at the LFF.
Well,
yeah, okay, there you go. So that's my second choice.
All I know about Love and Other Drugs is that it's something to do with Viagra. He's a Viagra salesman, or at least he's a pharmaceutical salesman,
and she's
a kind of free spirit, and it's their relationship.
She's a quirky free spirit, then.
My second choice will be I'm Still Here, the Joaquin Phoenix. Documentary. We still don't know whether it's true or not, but I suspect this is all planned.
And what is
supposedly Joaquin Phoenix took a year out? Quit acting, and the documentary is following.
Well, he didn't take a year out. He didn't make anything.
Well, yeah, but he took a year out to make this film.
It doesn't take a year to make a.
It does if you're following around for supposedly a year. Mm-hmm. You know, grew the beard and apparently, I read something about someone taking a shit on his head and something.
There's all those sorts of rumours. Is there a trailer for it?
Apparently there's a trailer that's just been released, yeah. I don't know what the hell. I'm really looking forward to it, though.
Yeah.
It's directed by Casey Affleck. And I can't wait to see it. And I'm going on the record. Joaquin Phoenix has not quit acting. He will be acting again once this film has come out.
He might be forced to quit acting.
Well, true. But yeah, I officially can't wait for that.
Right. Same here. It's not one of my picks, but I certainly hope it is there just to get a chance to see it. The next one I'm going to pick is True Grit, which I know is...
Yeah, I've got that too. That's the Coen Brothers remake of the John Wayne Western.
Yeah, starring the awesome Josh Brolin and Matt Damon. And is it... who else is in it?
I can't remember.
Is it anyone?
No, I don't know.
You do know?
I don't know. No,
I'll describe it to you.
Go on then.
You know him.
I tend not to research Coen Brothers too much. I don't want it to spoil.
The Big Lebowski guy.
Jeff Bridges.
That's it, yeah. Jeff Bridges.
I actually don't remember Jeff Bridges. Never mind.
Well, you didn't even know he was in it.
Yeah. No, I try not to. I try and avoid stuff about Coen Brothers movies as much as possible, because obviously I know I'm going to see it. I'm a huge Coen Brothers movie fan, and I know I'm going to enjoy it, and it's nice to kind of be surprised at the point, if you see what I mean. Or it's not as close as you can get to
it. I think knowing who's in it is going to ruin the surprise.
Not too bad. Okay, yeah, fair enough.
Yeah. Fair enough. But majorly looking forward to that. Again, the reasons for that is the Coen Brothers do seem to be the darlings of the London Film Festival, and, you know, a lot of festivals in general, I guess, but, yeah, most of their films...
They never show up, though. Well, they hardly ever show up
anything these days. I don't think... I've never seen interviews or anything with them.
They did stuff for No Country for Old Men, I think.
Well,
but they didn't show up. Did they show up last year for Serious Man?
No. Not that I recall.
But I've got that on my list too, so I'm tempted to agree with you, and I can't wait to see that. The Coen Brothers West End, that's just kind of heaven, really.
Yeah. Well then, let's have your number three.
Okay, again, another one that we've both got on our lists, The American, with George Clooney, which is out November 26th.
All right.
So that is a pretty likely, time. To me, that sounds a pretty likely.
I have a premiere with the...
Exactly. Plus, Clooney is also a bit of an NFF darling. So
two films last year, yeah?
Yeah, I know.
Two films. And he turned off pretty much
as well. Yeah, he'd fucked off by the time of Up in the Air. He didn't do the Up in the Air press conference, but he was there for Men in Hysteric Goats.
He pretty much had all the content you needed.
What was the other one?
Men in Hysteric Goats, Fantastic Mr. Fox.
Fantastic Mr. Fox, of course, yeah. Yeah, I don't know anything about The American, except, weirdly, it's written by the director of another strongly likely LFF film, Brighton Rock. It's written by the director. Something Joffey.
Rowan
Joffey, yeah. But who I met at MovieCon, and he's a really, really lovely guy. So I'm dying to see Brighton Rock.
Who's the young actor in it?
Sam Riley.
Sam Riley.
In Control.
Yeah, so really looking forward to that. You've already taken The Americans, I can't pick that. I'm going to go for The Fighter.
I can see one on your list that's well off.
What, is it that one?
No, it's The Social Network, because The Social Network opens before the London, or 2 days after the London Film Festival starts.
2 days after,
It has happened before, but that would mean it would be second day, third day.
And
so
that hasn't happened before?
Yeah, no, maybe not with something that big.
We don't know how big this is going to be. This could be another one that could be.
We'll see. Sorry, what was your
My choice is, I said The Fighter.
The Fighter, I don't know anything about that. What's the title of The Fighter?
It's a Denzel Russell film with Christian Bale and Mark Wahlberg and Amy Adams.
Okay.
It was supposed to come out, I think, earlier this year or late last year, and it's been pushed back, I guess, for Oscar contention this time around.
Okay.
Seriously looking forward to that. I think that
Have you seen a trailer for that?
I've not seen trailers, I've seen stills, but I reckon come Oscar time that could be, you heard it here first.
That does sound pretty exciting. I'll definitely go and look into that. Okay, I'm going to have a bit of a gamble. There's two gambles. I'll go for a sure thing. Number four, The Kids Are All Right.
Oh, right.
Suck it. Suck it, Luke.
From my list. Yeah.
Which I don't know much about, except I know it's Annette Bening, I know it's Julianne Moore, I know it's Mark Ruffalo, and I know that the plot apparently involves some children who were conceived by artificial insemination tracking down their dad and bringing him into their family.
Yeah, I'm going to go for my last pick then, which I think, if it's not in the main draw, will be a potentially surprise film.
Go for it.
The Girl Who Kicked the Hornet's Nest.
No way, you're joking.
Yeah.
Massive gamble.
Yeah, it is a massive gamble.
You
know, with the remake in the works and... I think, yeah.
You've gone out on a limb there, my friend.
That's what it's all about, you know.
I tell you right now, there's no way it'll be a surprise film.
No way in hell it will be a surprise film.
I will be very surprised if it's in the main draw, just because I think critical reaction to The Girl Who Played with Fire isn't as strong as your good self aside, isn't as strong as with The Girl with Dragon Tattoo. So I'll be really surprised if it makes.
Yeah, but all of these things would have been locked down before the reaction and stuff was coming out.
Yeah, and the release date. I can see why you chose it.
Release date was the main reason I went for it. Yeah. And they haven't featured any of the other two, and I know they're only sequels and whatnot, unless... So, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, if London had had... The thing is, Girl with the Dragon Tattoo played at Fright Fest, and if London had had Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, I might be inclined to agree with you. But I just don't... I mean, you know, I think they'll look at that and think it's a threequel. It might even be the weakest film of the lot. I don't know. Supposedly it's the weakest book of the three.
I don't know enough.
So I think you're going to be well wrong on that one, I'm afraid.
Four.
I am going to go with. I've got a toss-up choice here. Maybe you can say what you think one way or the other. I'm either going to go with Burke and Hare, which opens 29th of October, which is basically the end of the festival.
Right.
Quite likely, wouldn't you say? Doesn't seem like a London Film Festival film, I grant
you. That would be the main reason.
But John Landis will definitely come. Is it any good? That's another question. I've seen some footage from it, and to be honest, it could go either way. It could be very, very funny, or it could be a total disaster.
Right.
So I don't know.
So are you going for that or not then?
No, my other one is Trust, the David Schwimmer David Schwimmer pedo epic.
Right.
A paedophile epic. It's directed by David Schwimmer. It stars Clive Owen and Catherine Keener as parents who basically, I think they have a young daughter who's on the internet, and she meets what she thinks is a 14-year-old boy,
yeah.
And ends up, we're not really allowed to laugh at it, but it, she ends up meeting a paedophile, played by Tom McCarthy, who basically rapes her, and I mean, the entire movie is about the kind of aftermath of that, what that does to the family.
Heavy enough to be a...
Yeah, it does. I mean, interesting actors, very interesting actors for that kind, for that subject matter, I would have thought.
Almost certainly not a surprise film, though, if it's there.
No,
it's
definitely there. Not a surprise film. I don't really have one from this list that would qualify as a surprise film.
Well, that pick would be, I think, if it was there.
Hereafter, maybe. Yeah. Okay, let's finish the guesses first. I am going to go... you've had a gamble on Girl Kick the Hornet's Nest. I am going to have a gamble on Trust.
Yeah.
So Trust is my...
I think you've gone for a more English or American language selection there. Whereas
I had one called The Housemaid, which is... I actually don't know what the nationality of the film is, but I know it's either Korean.
Because I had a few, and then for some reason... Oh, I did go for one. I see The Girl Who Kicked the Hornet's Nest. Because, yeah, they do tend to have a few foreign films there.
What's Carlos on your list there?
Carlos is the Carlos the Jackal film.
Okay.
But yeah, that would be
Black Swan. Black Swan would be a good guess, I think. No release date for that yet.
Yeah, that was kind of the reason. And also, I think it's just such a high-profile one for Toronto, is it? Or Venice?
It's Venice, I think.
It just kind of makes me think they wouldn't want to sort of associate with that. But I am massively looking forward to that.
Yeah, me too. Having seen the trailer.
Tree of Life would have been interesting. I'm really hoping...
No way that's going to be finished.
I wouldn't mind losing this if I get to see Tree of Life.
No way Tree of Life will be finished in time. What's London Boulevard?
London Boulevard is a Colin Farrell film, I think, with Keira Knightley. Again, just mainly based on the talent, I went for that one.
Okay.
And then we've got some of the other contenders that we have. Machete was an outside bet, again, release date-wise.
I would be amazed if Machete is in the... I'd be delighted if Machete is in the LFF. Oh, I've got to tell you something about Machete from Fright Fest. You've seen the trailer, right?
Yeah.
You've seen the Red Band trailer?
Yeah.
Okay, there's a bit in the trailer, there's a fantastic bit in the trailer where he jumps out of a window and he's hanging on some sort of rope or something and swings into the window like underneath and smashes through that. And so he jumps out of a window, smashes the glass, swings on this rope down through the window underneath, right? That's in at least one trailer, possibly even two trailers. The footage they showed at Fright Fest reveals that what he's actually swinging down on is someone's intestines.
Right.
They showed this ultra-violent clip reel from it where he's just like hacking on people's heads off and arms off and... You know, just like lots of basically blood and guts, but it looks absolutely fantastic. I can't wait.
Really looking forward to that.
Other things on my list, I have, Hereafter, the Clint Eastwood film, and yeah, no way it's going to be a surprise film. If they had Hereafter, it would be in the proper lineup. Mm. Same with True Grit. I mean, I know they had the surprise film of No Country for Old Men a couple of years ago, but that was like the least surprising film in surprise film history. Everybody knew going into that movie.
Although, interestingly, last year no one knew. Everyone was hedging
bets. What was it last year, do you remember?
It was the Michael Moore one.
Capitalism and Love Story, yeah.
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 And no one guessed that. Everyone was thinking...
It's always a tricky science, a surprise movie. Always very, very difficult.
It's been Edinburgh, in the past.
Edinburgh has dropped it for the past 2 years. They used to have one, and they haven't had one for the past 2 years. Yeah, in theory, we'd do another No Country for Old Men rather than another Capitalism and Love Story, but we'll see. We'll see, I guess.
Cool.
What is The Debt?
The Debt is a Sam Worthington film, which looks very, very similar to that Steven Spielberg film.
Munich,
yes. It looks very similar to that. I think they're collecting on The Debt, though, that was amassed. I think Nazi gold, if anything. But, yeah, it could well be a contender. I don't know. Sofia Coppola film, somewhere, might be there. 13 Assassins, just because it's Takashi Miike. Yeah, I jumped in there. Miike. And Tom Twaker film 3 as well, which is just based on the talent behind it. You might have a bit of a gamble on those.
Who's in that?
Don't know who's in that. Just
and you've got the next 3 days with Russell Crowe.
Yeah, I had that as a potential. I don't know. Has there been a Russell Crowe film at the festival before?
Yeah, but not for a while. I would have thought LA Confidential.
Oh, wow. Well, before my time.
Insider was definitely there. Insider was a surprise movie. Okay. That year that came out.
That would have been a good one.
Yeah, it was.
But you're a civilian?
I was a civilian, and I did the entire festival. I saw everything I wanted to see, did the entire festival by the returns queue, basically waited in the returns queue every night and saw everything I wanted to see.
But did you have to get in the queue nice and early?
Yeah, you do, yeah. But that's my hot tip for the festival. They tell you everything's sold out. The reality is nothing's ever sold out. They always have a massive amount of unclaimed corporate tickets that basically don't go on sale until the last minute. And you can always, always, always get into anything you want to see if you just turn up an hour or so beforehand.
Yep.
The other ones on my list were, back in there we talked about, just one more, Rabbit Hole, with Nicole Kidman and Aaron Eckhart.
Okay, well, we've got a list, we'll stick those up on the website, along with the podcast.
Oh, the website?
Yeah.
I suppose we can do that, yeah. Okay. Well, the website address is turnerandlooch.blogspot.com. It's a blog, basically. Okay.
Just briefly mention the film news from this week, which I had nicely typed up. I haven't got at hand, although I do have in mind what we're going to talk about. We mentioned The Girl Who Kicked the Hornet's Nest. They finally cast someone in the role of Lisbeth Salander. I don't know if it's going to have the same name, actually, when they remake it. But they've got Daniel Craig on board, and now they've got someone called Rooney Mara, who you know something about, I guess?
I know she's Kate Mara's sister, who isn't really famous enough yet, although you might know her face from various things. Actually, to be honest, I can't name a movie that she's been in my head.
Was she not in The Shooter with Mark Wahlberg?
Possibly, yeah. Rooney Mara has done something. I mean, if you want to pause, or at least if you want to fill, I'll IMDb her and work out.
Well, we'll carry on with some of the other tidbits, I guess, that we had. We mentioned that that there's a new Redux version of Star Wars coming out from George Lucas, with supposedly scenes that were deleted but that are going to be added onto the Blu-ray version. Not particularly excited about that. Not one of my favourite franchises.
Terrible idea, George. We heard it here first.
I think everyone's been telling him that for I don't know how long, but it's gone on for long enough. Also in the news that January Jones from Mad Men has been cast in the X-Men remake or reboot.
As Emma Frost,
yes, which is quite interesting. Still can't find a role for Christina Hendricks, which is a shame, but I'm sure they could manage it somehow. Where are we with the John Hamm and Superman rumour?
That's the first I've heard of it. I didn't know there was
a John Hamm. Very big rumour. Massive.
Really?
Yeah.
I think, no, he'd be an idiot to do that.
He's in the lead. It's either that or they're going...
I can see why they want him. He looks right, but he'd be an idiot.
Looks right for a 40-year-old Superman, Clark Kent, which is not really what the stories that we're familiar with are about, are they?
I'll be amazed if John Hamm signs to do Superman. I think his career doesn't need that part, basically. I think he's doing well enough off the back of Mad Men.
If you look at
some of the films he's in.
Yeah.
He's in
The Town.
He's in The Town. I saw a clip from The Town at MovieCon. It looks fantastic. Except for Ben Affleck. But
he's in it as well as directing, right?
Yeah. Ben Affleck is in it as well as directing.
Yeah, the rumour is either
that's a good pair for London Film Festival as well, actually.
No, I think it's out in September.
Really?
Yeah, that's soon.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Oh, cool.
They were talking about carrying on the Smallville story on the big screen with Tom Welling as a returning Superman / Clark Kent.
That's the option I want.
I'd certainly be in favour of that, having followed the series for the last 10 outings and with the lineup they've got. As long as they keep, obviously...
I knew you'd find a way to work Smallville into this somehow.
As time is brief and as we plan to talk about TV a little bit, it's worth noting that Smallville returns in a couple of weeks.
In the States?
Yep.
Really?
September.
Fantastic.
So, and my point was that I hope they keep a lot of the cast from the TV series in the film. At least Clark and Lois.
Lois.
Well,
surely Clark I can live without Lois, I definitely want.
You want the Lois Lane movie then, don't you?
Yeah, I do. I want the Lois Lane movie. The sexy adventures of Lois Lane, that's what I want. Okay, Rooney Mara is in The Social Network, which obviously we haven't seen yet. She was in the Nightmare on Elm Street remake.
Yeah.
She's in Youth of Revolt. She plays Taggarty in Youth of Revolt. That's the Taggarty is the
slaggy best friend.
The slaggy best friend that sleeps with VJ. She was in the ER. They've cast her because she's not that well known.
Once you mentioned who she played in Youth of Revolt, I do remember the character and I do remember what she looks like and thinking that was quite a good character. But they did go for a relatively unknown. I mean, the rumours were Emma Watson, Kristen Stewart and some other big names.
I didn't hear Kristen Stewart. I knew Emily Browning was up for it.
Emily Browning was going to
be.
Yeah, yeah. sucker punches, maybe you're going to have to suffice for now. Which, did you see that at MovieCon? Did they have footage of Sunshine?
Yeah, that's a different, they showed a different trailer to the one I've seen on YouTube, but there's this great bit where she's kind of leaping up to fight this giant kind of monster slash robot thing. I don't even know what it is. It's either a monster or a robot. Might even be a monster robot. But that particular scene looks just awesome.
But I am massively looking forward to that as well. So
we don't want to see that for ages, though. When's that out?
No, next year. Middle-ish next year. I think probably in the Watchmen slot they've got early, sort of March, that kind. But yeah, that's pretty much the news. We can't pretend...
I was expecting a bit more news than just
that. We didn't even know about the John Hamm thing, which I'm stunned by, given that you're...
Well, it's not confirmed, is it? That's not news.
He is the front runner.
Confirmed isn't news.
Rumoured,
it's not news.
I'm saying he is the front runner for the Superman role, and you're saying that's not news. Yeah, right.
Well, because I call bullshit on Don Draper being the front runner for the Superman role. They may well be saying they want him.
Yeah.
They may well be saying they want him. I'm saying they won't get him. He won't do it.
They could get him. If they made an offer,
he won't do it.
I agree.
He won't do it.
I think
he's got too much. He's got too much in his career coming up now to do Superman.
When's Man of Steel? Is this the last series? Series 4?
No, I think they're going to go on until they get the can. Basically, I think
he's going to quit.
That series is going from strength to strength.
He will quit before the end.
No way.
He will quit before the end of that series. He will quit to be Superman.
So you're getting carried away.
End of series 4, you'll find Don Draper dying dramatically in the halo.
I'm assuming you're taking the piss.
Resurrected as Superman. No, that's a fact. I've got inside information.
Okay.
That's a spoiler. Massive spoiler.
Incidentally, since we are talking about TV, Mad Men starts. The BBC have caved, and it was rumoured it was going to be in January. They are now starting series 4 in September, in the first week of September.
I've got to tell you. I'm not convinced by Mad Men yet. I've only seen 5 episodes.
That's why you're not convinced. See more episodes.
But how many more? I mean, I'm watching it in order. They're rerunning it on BBC 2. How much longer do I have to give it before it picks up? I mean, it's interesting. It's well made.
To be fair, I guess it doesn't really pick up as such. Nothing really happens.
Right.
I mean, things do happen. It's not a kind of plot-heavy series. You really have to kind of immerse yourself in the sort of atmosphere of it.
It's pretty poor bits in it, though. I thought those bits with Jeremy Jones.
We're moving on.
I'm not having you dissing Mad Men while we're sitting here. They're kind of going, oh, how bad.
Not on the basis of 5 episodes.
How bad was parenting in the 60s? And all in one
In the first series.
Not in the first series. In one episode, in the space of 5 minutes, she's driving around, having a car crash with the kids in the back without a seatbelt on. She sat at a table smoking with someone else who stands up and you realise, oh my god, she's pregnant and she's smoking and having a drink. And then her kid comes in with a bag on her head and she goes, I hope you didn't ruin the clothes, carry on playing with the bag on your head.
There's an episode later on where they're having a picnic in the park and instead of taking the rubbish to a bin, they just toss it away in the park and just leave it there.
Every episode
in the first series has a oh my god, we're in the 60s, terrible moment. In much the same way that The Sopranos in the first series every week had a Weapon of the Week moment.
Okay, cool. Whilst we're on the subject of TV, why don't you tell us what the film of the week is on TV?
I will tell you what the film of the week is on TV. It was very smooth.
My radio.
For me, the film of the week next week is Junebug, which is on Sunday night on BBC Two. Junebug, famous for being the film that won Amy Adams the Best Supporting Actress Oscar. Maybe she didn't win it. But she was certainly...
I certainly remember her being a surprise name on that list.
I can't see anybody winning it over her unless...
Remember her winning an Oscar, is my point.
Pretty much the favourite, yeah, she was the favourite. And she's amazing, isn't it? I mean, you have to see it just for her. The film stars Alessandro Novella, who is a close personal friend of mine, as you may have gathered by now. He's not really a close personal friend, but he was a very entertaining guest at Edinburgh. He was very friendly to everyone. So he plays he's moved away from his family, his kind of countryfied, if you like, family in North Carolina, and he's married Embeth Davitt, who is an art gallery owner. And she has come down to North Carolina to investigate a local artist, basically, who paints very sort of weird paintings. And because she's come down to North Carolina, he uses that as an opportunity to come and visit his family, who he hasn't seen for a long time. And his brother, played by Benjamin McKenzie from The O.C., he's kind of jealous about, you know, the fact that he's left, and his brother has a very sweet-natured wife, pregnant wife, played by Amy Adams. And there isn't really much of a plot beyond the kind of tensions between everybody and what have you, but it's a really kind of engaging and really brilliantly acted and often very funny film. It's not a comedy per se, but it's you know, it's got some funny moments.
Yeah, I missed that when it came out. So,
ooh, you should see it. It is really good. Definitely worth seeing.
Well, your recommendations are here and miss.
BBC
well.
Two. Oh no, that's, you will like it.
That's
there's no way you won't like it. Yeah. There's no way that you personally won't like it because right. You're a big Amy Adams fan.
Who isn't?
Yeah. Well, exactly. But yeah. But yeah, that's the film of the week as far as I'm concerned. And while we're on the subject of things of the week, the DVD of the week this week is Whip It, directed by Drew Barrymore. I managed to acquire a copy of this yesterday.
That's a finished copy, I think.
It is a finished copy, yes. None of your checklist nonsense. The holy grail of DVD reviewing is getting finished copies instead of checklist. And this is a proper finished copy.
Now, we're not saying that the fact that you've got a finished copy is the reason we're mentioning it, but...
And how long does the post usually take to arrive?
I don't know. Not more than a few days, to be honest.
Interesting.
All good to go.
It looks like one film, and it's actually another. Like, it looked like, you know, you see Roller Derby...
it looks like Juno doing Roller Derby.
You see... Yeah, it does look like Juno doing Roller Derby.
And it's not that film.
You see team of scrappy underdogs, you think they're going to win at the end. You see her, it being a coming-of-age movie, and her getting this boyfriend in a rock band, you think they're going to end up together happily at the end. You see her in conflict with her... And her mother is Marcia Gay Harden. So you see her having clashes with her mother, who wants to be in beauty pageants, and she wants to be in roller derby. And, you know, to be fair, that plot does go sort of the way you expect. But the relationship between her and her mother is drawn much more sort of realistically and doesn't play out the way you exactly expect. Yeah, I don't want to give away any...
Well, you might as well have given away the whole film.
No, I haven't. I really haven't. Yeah, but it's funny, it's sweet, it's a really good coming-of-age movie, it's also a really good female role model movie. I've got at least three friends who have developed an interest in roller derby and have joined roller derby teams as a result of this movie. And you know, the DVD's actually, I should also say the DVD's pretty good too. The DVD has 15 minutes of deleted scenes, which is a pretty decent amount of deleted scenes for this kind of film.
That is the DVD of the week. Also out this week is The Joneses, which I thought was excellent.
But
no extras on that one, unfortunately. It's probably the reason why we can whip it ahead of it.
Can we say what it's about?
No, I did a review and I didn't say what it's about. I said the trailer gives it away, and if you watch
okay,
the trailer...
Okay, well, without going too much...
It's a very smart film that takes a look at commercialism.
It's about
the American dream.
Advertising strategies. A particularly... unusual advertising strategy, let's say.
Well, that leaves you asking the question, is it that unusual? Have you been victim to that sort of scenario yourself? And we haven't actually reviewed the films for this week. So I would like to try and bring it back to that.
Okay.
I guess we'll do it briefly.
We can try, yeah, okay.
Yeah, we can do it briefly. That's a hint there, briefly.
Right.
Big film this week is The Expendables, out in cinemas now.
It's not my favourite film of the week.
Not my favourite film either. It is the granddad's sort of getting together team movie action thriller type thing. It's not as good as you want it to be, and it's not as, I don't know, it's not as enjoyable as I was hoping it would be either. There's action is there, and I thought the lack of CGI was kind of good, but you seem to think there's a lot more CGI going on than we might have noticed.
Yeah.
But I guess that's the point of good CGI, you don't notice it. But yeah. And it focuses mainly on Stallone, Statham and Jet Li, which I think is another mistake. I would love to see the Dolph Lundgren movie with him as a, you know, much bigger character than he is in this. But yeah, not my favourite film either. I think, you know, what you're getting with this.
I'm kind of embarrassed by how much I enjoyed The Expendables, because I hated The A-Team, and I enjoyed The Losers, but I wasn't crazy about The Losers. I think I gave it 3. And I was expecting The Expendables to be basically rubbish, and it is basically rubbish, but it's also really, really enjoyable. If you like gunfights, explosions, punch-ups, and gunfights, explosions, punch-ups, and stabbings. Lots and lots of stabbings. There are probably more stabbings in this movie, in The Expendables, than I've
That's
seen.
That's what
in,
we
in
need, like, hood-wearing.
Yeah, I know.
Kids
I
mean, of today, to watch films about stabbing.
I'm actually really surprised that there's been no kind of tabloid, ban this sick filth,
you know, Jason Statham making stabbing look fun.
Well, hang on, you know why there isn't?
Tabloids, no
because
way.
Because the other film out this week is The Human Centipede.
You're saying they deliberately released the beat? No, you're not.
Well, I'm just saying, if any tabloid sort of bugbear was to come to fruition, it would be this sick film right here, which is about a mad German scientist who stitches together three unsuspecting teens, young characters, which is one of the problems with the film, by the way. But anyway, three young...
They're not teens.
They're young, attractive characters, which... so he stitches them together from mouth to backside. Except for the lead... Well, anyway, so there's three sections of this human centipede, and basically it's him trying to train them to work as one. And it's a film which you claim to be quite sweet.
No, I retracted that after seeing it a second time. I was thinking that the relationship between the three people who are the centipede was quite sweet in the way that they kind of ended up, they were forced together, and they therefore ended up kind of having to work together to try and escape and something. And there is a scene that backs that up, but it's only a very short scene, and it doesn't really hold for the rest of the film. So there is the relationship is kind of touching, but it's also it's obviously very upsetting. It's being marketed as the sickest film ever made, the most disgusting film ever made. The premise is really horrible, but what you actually see on screen isn't that horrible at all.
I agree with that. And they cut away from... It's obviously quite you'd imagine a gruesome sort of surgery that he conducts to get them all stitched up together. And they tease they're going to go into great detail with that, and then they don't. And you just see them together about the halfway.
And they have bandages around the crucial kind of connection points, which kind of lessens the...
The bandages do come off by the end.
Not so properly. No, they don't, actually.
They do. You just don't see it. Yeah, by the end when you can see the...
You see a little bit. You don't see... The bandage itself is still on there properly. You don't see the actual...
I reckon that was probably just because he couldn't.
Actually, what did you give The Expendables?
I gave Expendables 3.
I went 4 in the end. I just thought...
This is a thing that we're going to have to talk about.
It was so much fun.
At some point, is his generous rating system, whereby you gave, 50 films, 5 last year?
No way.
Yeah, something like that.
No, that's lies.
Our good friend Emerson Ford counted them up, and they were...
You trust Emerson to count properly. I guarantee you, he'll have clicked on Rotten Tomatoes, he'll have looked down the list, and he won't have noticed which ones are from which year. So he will have counted 50, but he won't have noticed that that's...
He won't have noticed that's spread over 10 years. With 5 stars. It just wasn't Matthew Turner. No, it was someone else. No, Michael,
not
someone.
True. Not true. It is true that I'm very generous, and my friends all tell me that in order to get a film's true star rating, they deduct one from what I've given it.
Ooh,
and I sometimes I take that into account, and sometimes I don't. Sometimes I let I kind of go with... Do you know what? I gave loads of things 4 stars this week. I gave The Human Centipede 4 stars. Oh. I gave Piranha 3D 4 stars.
I'm with you on that one.
I gave Mother 4 stars, which for me is the film of the week.
What did you give Salt?
Okay, Salt 4 stars as well.
Okay, ridiculous. Yeah. Now we know we...
No, because Salt is so much better...
Than what?
Than Night and Day, for example. Night and Day I really hate.
Right, so Night and Day is 2.
I mean, they're obviously quite clearly linked, because Tom Cruise was going to play Salt, and he bailed on Salt to play the character in Night and Day. So they're both kind of action thrillers. I suppose Night and Day is a bit more of a comedy romance thriller than it is an action thriller. But you know, they're both kind of fast-paced, location to location, lots of action sequences and stuff. I really enjoyed Salt.
It's
silly.
Salt is very enjoyable, very serious, very well made for an hour. And then it just becomes the most tedious sort of pap.
I didn't get the last half an hour.
You know exactly what's going to happen.
It gets ridiculous.
You know exactly what's going to happen. You know exactly who's going to turn where and when. And it confines itself into this unnecessary location when it could have been a lot bigger. It's like, oh, let's have the finale in this sort of danger room, which is really kind of undermines the character.
I really enjoyed seeing her kind of like sneak up on them all, like through the door and work her way into that danger room.
Her do that already on the barge. I just thought it was a missed opportunity. It's a great character, and I wouldn't mind seeing her as Evelyn Sol. I just don't think this is the best vehicle for it. I think another film would...
I had a really good time watching it. And also, it just works.
It
worked for me. It was an enjoyable film, and yes, I'd be very happy to see Salt 2.
I can also say that I can't imagine any other female character, female actress playing that role, being convincing in terms of the more sensitive moments as well as the action. So yeah, she's perfect for that role. Hope we see more of the character. I don't think Salt is the best vehicle for it, and
I think it's a good film for her. I think it's a great film for her.
It did well in the States.
Yeah, I think it's a great film, but as a movie star.
And it's also helped a lot by the news of the Russian spies actually being found undercover in the US.
Yeah, well done, Sony, for planting the Russian spies.
Someone did a good job there. But that is it. That's the roundup of the films.
No, it's not. We've missed some.
Here we go. Marmaduke. Tell me about Marmaduke. You're so desperate to talk about Marmaduke.
Marmaduke. What can you say about Marmaduke? I didn't give Marmaduke 3 stars. Marmaduke's a 2 for me. Comfortably the worst film of the week.
It's not bad.
It's not terrible.
I mean, it's sad.
Just bad.
It's more pointless than anything. And I agree. We've seen a lot worse than that.
Yeah.
And
it's better than Cats and Dogs 2.
Yeah.
It's better than Garfield.
Yeah.
Definitely better than Garfield too.
Really bad, and it's not. It's just, fine, there you go.
You didn't see Piano Mania, did you?
I did not, no.
Piano Mania is a film about a piano tuner. It's a documentary about a piano tuner, and you literally watch a guy tuning a piano for an hour and a half.
Is it just one piano?
It's a series of pianos for a series of different concert pianists.
Right.
And the guy is like an Austrian version of Niles Crane. He looks like Niles Crane. He talks a little bit like Niles Crane. His humour is very kind of similar. It's a really fascinating film in that you're watching somebody do a very complicated job do a very complicated job very efficiently, but it is, at the heart of it is watching a guy tune a piano for an hour.
I'm going to ask you, and you're going to be honest, did you fall asleep in this film?
Yes.
How many times did you fall asleep?
Just the once, but once was enough.
But it lasted 90 minutes, so there you go, from the start to the end.
I never fall asleep. Let's just say I had trouble keeping my eyes open. That's probably fairer.
I never actually
sleep.
Oh, I disagree. I respectfully disagree. I've seen you snoring away.
Not for like a minute of time.
Been asleep.
Lies. No, somebody I was sitting next to in that screening said that he counted a record number of critics asleep during it. So
it was the end of a long day.
So I was in good company.
We'd done Piranha 3 before that, and then Marmaduke, and then it was Piano Mania.
I was in
just
good company.
Briefly on Piranha 3D, which is out today. I haven't seen Mother yet, so I'm not entirely on the same level as you, but I'd go as far as saying Piranha 3D is probably film of the week for me.
Really?
Yeah.
You haven't seen Piano Mania?
I haven't seen Piano Mania or Mother, but
you've got to see
it.
Really have to see Mother.
I will check it out on DVD, but I thought it was better than Expendables. I thought they're both trashy and fun, but I thought Piranha 3D made the best of what it had, which was the 3D and the premise of just, loads of...
Without the nude underwater lesbian ballet sequence, which, incidentally, is also simultaneously a homage to the underwater sequence in Tarzan and His Mate, and the underwater sequence in Creature from the Black Lagoon, which is pretty impressive film reference nerdery, even in a film like Piranha 3D. Without that scene, I would have given it 3, because for me, although it's very good and I did really enjoy it.
Oh, 3D was
3D effects is really good. 3D effects are really good. The gore is pretty good. There's obviously loads of nudity. The acting's very good. I thought Elizabeth Shue was great. And
she stood out as the convincing female.
Christopher Lloyd's cameo channeling Doc Brown, very, very funny.
Who?
Christopher Lloyd channeling Doc Brown.
Doc Brown. No, you said something else, but...
I said Doc Brown.
Doc Brown.
I said Doc.
Right, I can rewind that in a second.
I said Doc. Christopher Lloyd channeling Doc Brown, really, really great. But I felt that it didn't... There were some scenes that could have been better directed, like without giving too much away, but one particular death scene involving one of the people I just mentioned is shot in such a way that you can't even tell that he's dying until it's kind of a bit too late. And that scene should have kind of emotional impact, or dramatic impact in some way, because they're playing kind of dramatic music over it. But it's shot so confusingly that it just doesn't register.
I mean, we disagree about this. I guess we'll wait until people see it. But I think it was deliberately meant to be a heroic and stoic death, whereas you seem to think... You're not the only one that said you couldn't tell...
The angle is shot... It's a bad angle that scene is shot from. There's some bad continuity errors in it as well. There's a cameraman character that just completely disappears. He's pushed off the steering wheel. He's still on the boat. He's pushed off the steering wheel of the boat. And that's the last you see of him. You never see him again. There's no death scene. Robbie Collins said that someone had told him that he's briefly visible as a corpse in the water, but I didn't see it. And that's kind of irrelevant, because if you don't... In a movie in which every character gets a death by piranha, you need to see...
They don't, do they? There are some other deaths.
But what I'm saying, in that particular case... character disappears, you know he's been eaten by piranhas. Where is the
you
piranha?
You did not see
character?
It because that is the scene where Kelly Brook is in, and I think you're diverted towards Kelly Brook.
No.
And didn't notice the middle-aged
Kelly
cameraman.
Brook acquits herself very well, actually.
I thought
she was very good in it.
She's perfectly fine.
Matt wants us to mention his Kelly Brook in 3DD joke. For my money, actually, Mother's probably top 20 of the year, which we haven't also, which reminds me.
Right, we're going to say that for next week. We're going to do the top 10 of the films that we've seen so far this year next week.
Okay.
Kind of gives you a chance to maybe add some things to your list or take some other things away.
Okay.
I guess we want to address finally, I'm bringing the and finally into it now, unless you've got something particular.
We had a couple of questions to answer. Oh,
yeah, those are the final things then. Okay. We'll round up what we're doing next week. After this, but yeah, first up, a couple of questions that we've had posed to us on Twitter.
A question.
Turner and Luch are on the case.
Right, yeah.
And by the way, we're changing that order as well, so it's going to be Luch and Turner.
So yeah, I don't think so, somehow.
I think so. The joke's over, we've had it.
We did have a question, which was from a newbie, and someone who's new to Twitter, and asked about film people to follow on Twitter. And
I'm going to say right now, I find a lot of film people on Twitter quite annoying.
Right. Controversial.
Yeah.
I'm going to say I don't agree with you there.
I'm not going to name names, obviously, but it's mainly the ones where you kind of, all you hear is, I'm watching X, Y, and Z. Ha ha, you're not. And I'm not saying they do.
Isn't that all of us? You've done that too.
I've not done that.
You've totally done that too.
I've not done that.
I do that all the time now. I mean, I do a daily what I'm seeing.
I know you.
People are interested. The people
are interested
in what I'm seeing in a day.
And the people who I do really follow is, and we kind of touched on the subject he covers, is the Charles Gant. The thing that the box office breakdown.
Box office breakdown
is immense. That's probably the one thing I really look forward to.
Yeah, me too.
On a regular basis.
I'm glad you brought that up because I was going to mention that myself. Actually, we really are going to overrun massively. Yeah. Should we save this till next time?
We'll go into other people to follow. But if for your newbie friend, the first person to start following, apart from us, I would say it's Charles Gant, and look out for his box office breakdown every Monday or Tuesday, is it?
Monday or Tuesday in The Guardian, The UK box office breakdown. I actually really wish he'd do a US box office breakdown as well.
Awesome. It is really, really good. It's just a fun library.
He thinks of every single possible question you could want and comparison you could want with that week's UK box office figures, and gives you comparisons to that point last year, to equivalent releases from the year before, to equivalent movies in the same kind of genre or franchise or things like that. It's just, he puts a hell of a lot of work into it and it really pays off.
Imagine that 45-minute opening we did for the top five in the US, done in a short 50-minute format that is entertaining and sort of you can't take your eyes off it. That is what he does, and I think it's brilliant. Definitely the first person.
We should just sit here and read out Charles's column every week.
The audio book of Charles's box office breakdown. But yeah, so that is where we think you should start. We'll give you some more people to follow in the coming weeks. If there's one you want to suggest.
Well, I mean, let's do a couple. I find Robbie Collin, the film reviewer for the News of the World, is always very entertaining on Twitter. Often very funny. He has a great writing style. Prior to Robbie Collin writing for the News of the World, I never would have gone to the News of the World to read their film reviews. You know. But since Robbie's been writing for them, I read them religiously, basically. So follow him.
And then he also gets his reviews in early.
How the hell did he manage that?
Oh, no, I'm not talking about that specific one. I'm talking more about he will put the week's reviews up on a Sunday when you will find a lot of the other newspapers not doing that.
No, actually they both do that, the Mirror, the Sunday Mirror, and Robbie Collin and Mark Adams both do it.
Yeah, but someone like The Guardian doesn't put their reviews up until Thursday or Friday for the week's releases, which can be a little bit frustrating, especially for films out Wednesday or something like that.
Mm. Mm.
So,
yeah, good point.
Fair play to Robbie on that.
Yeah, actually, people don't take account of the Wednesday openings. The broadsheets don't seem to.
But there you go. So Robbie Collin, is it Robbie Reviews?
It's Robbie Reviews, yeah.
On Twitter.
And Charles Gant is at Charles Gant.
Those are two I'll say.
Are we going to pick one more?
No, we're going to save it for next week. There's plenty of other people on there that we know of. We can.
If you're following us, I'm at FilmFan1971 and Kassam is at Tony Jar's Elbow, all one word.
Yeah.
You're following us,
you have to search for our name.
Just
or search for Turner and Luke. We can.
Is that it?
Yeah.
Is that it?
There's a lot of stuff we've missed out. I know.
We will. Okay. Next week we want your questions and your suggestions for content.
We might have a guest.
We might have a guest.
There's people begging already to get in on it.
There are. Yeah. It's weird that.
I know.
I'll tell you what else is weird is the is people's enthusiastic reaction. Just on the off chance that people are actually still listening at this point, we thought we might talk about our favourite books that have been made into films. And so if you could suggest your favourites or your least favourites, or also talk about films, books that you would like to be made into films and why, mm-hmm. And we'll read out suggestions. Suggestions can be emailed to turnerandlooch@gmail.com or addressed to us at Twitter at turnerandlooch.
And we're also going to be reviewing the big films of the week, which include Scott Pilgrim vs. the World, which we briefly talked about, well, not so briefly to be honest, which we've talked about today. Also, Avatar, the reissue of that, which is coming out again in 3D with 8 extra minutes, is it?
Yeah.
Looking forward to seeing that one again. Although I've only seen it once, so I am kind of looking forward to it, to be fair. Some of the other films. Is Dinner for Schmucks out next week?
I think Dinner for Schmucks is out next week. Diary of a Wimpy Kid is also out next week.
Okay. I am on my way to watch Jonah Hex. Matthew, unbelievably, is not going to watch a film on a Friday night.
No, Empire have given the last 7 2 stars, look.
There is a subject in itself, something we have been debating, and I suspect we'll come into it in the next couple of weeks.
They've given the last Airbender, I gave the last Airbender 2 stars.
It's not that bad. Anyway, we'll talk about all of this and more next week. Make sure you tune in. This has been the Turner and Looch podcast. Thank you very much for listening, and we will be back.
Thank you.
Goodbye.
Christopher Lloyd's cameo channeling Doc Brown, very, very funny.
Who?
Christopher Lloyd cat channeling Doc Brown.
Doc Brown? No, you said something else, but...
I said Doc Brown.
Doc Brown.
I said Doc. Doc Brown, Doc Brown, Doc Brown, Doc Brown.
At long last, a friendship bonded by the struggle against a man has been brought to an end by kung fu treachery.